It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. We are off and running on this, the 30th day of January 2018. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com and headon.live are where we live. And of course, if you click to get to the chat room from either of those locations, you'll be part of the Madcap Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. And you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and B.T. Blom and me, Bob Kincaid, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, not having made his appearance just quite yet. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know that we are golden on both streams. That means that, well, TuneIn's working and Stitcher's working and Roku's working and the White Rose Society stream is working, and oh, goodness me. And, of course, the always reliable headon.live stream. Let's hope it stays that way. But while it is working that way, a quick reminder, just a little housekeeping. If TuneIn and all that stuff isn't working, you can. If the White Rose stream goes down, go over to headon.live. The stream is easy to play there. It can't be any simpler. And it doesn't require Java, and I'll be there, because rare are the occasions when I'm not behind the microphone at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I dare say, yes. So, good evening, Ralphs, popping into the chat room. Good to see you. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew, you know. Generally speaking, if I'm not going to be on the air, I'll put out a tweet, I'll put something up on Facebook, I'll do both. Who knows, maybe I'll even put up something on Instagram, or stand out on the porch and scream. But generally speaking, if you're not getting it, because all of those Roku, Stitcher, TuneIn, those things all rely on the White Rose stream, which sometimes goes kerflooey for reasons we don't fully understand. Because science is funny that way. Write that down, headon.live. Okay, cool. So that takes care of that little bit of business. Now, other business. Time out. Really, it's 21 degrees out there and there's pollen somewhere? Or maybe I'm allergic to propane? I don't know. That one didn't show up. It's a pleasant 55 degrees, about 6 feet and 4 inches off the floor here in the studio. Down on the floor, it's about 15 to 20 degrees lower, I suspect. But anyway, we'll get through this evening. This is pneumonia weather. Freezing cold and then soggy and wet and middling. We'll get through it. We'll muddle through. It is, Tuesday... here in Merca,
the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God.
State of the Union Tuesday, yes, which means it's sort of a self-actualizing Titanic Tuesday. There will be profound displays of Titanic intellect probably already happening. Here in a couple of hours, the Marmalade Mussolini will take to the podium, Mr. Speaker! Right, after all the... And after the entire print run of tickets to the State of the Union address having been recalled by the House of Representatives because they can't spell union, you know, that there's a kind of a... The goddess of irony's hand was at work in that. No, really. They printed up their tickets and sent them out, and it invited people to participate or to attend, or entitled the bearer. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Entitled the bearer to entrance to the State of the Union. UNIOM. You know, when you don't care enough to proofread your tickets, especially the title of the event, and the event is a reference to the formal type of country we have here. Really, it's kind of Freudian, isn't it? State of the Union. Mm-hmm. They had to recall them and reprint them. Sure, that didn't cost much. It's just blue cardboard tickets. I mean, so what? Yeah, they got a print shop there in the Capitol, right? State of the Union. We also have thanks to send out. We absolutely do. We have two subscribers on the 30th day of the month. And so we send out our hearty thanks to our buddy Clarence in Philly. And to our pal Paul down in far Arizona. Thank you to both of you for being part of what keeps the program on the air. Thank you very much indeed. And that dispenses with that portion of the evening. January will be over tomorrow. We've got two more days, tonight and tomorrow, two more nights of fundraising free radio. I find that, it's a pity. It's a pity we don't have, an entire month, but we'll leave that as it is. But that's how it, that's how it all works out. What all? Robert in Morgantown reminding me, if you're looking for an alternative to the State of the Union or something to enjoy for afters, Jimmy Kimmel has Stormy Davis on his show tonight. Of course he does. Of course he does. I was rather hoping she would be in the audience. I don't know why. I don't know why some Democratic member of the House or Senate didn't invite her. Just to put it wouldn't have looked good if a male member had done that, but you know, one of the women, a little memo went out from but the Nancy Pelosi made a remark during the Democratic caucus meeting today. Very good, very good. Glenn pointing out with regard to State of the Union, maybe Trump's dentures came loose when he ordered the tickets. I thought that made him slur, though. Well, he slurs every time he speaks, but and I don't mean in terms of replacing an S with a T-A. Not an S, but like a lateral S or something. No, I mean, it's just, his very existence is a slur on the Republic. But We can talk about that later, I suppose. But really, really, a female member of Congress really should have invited Stormy Daniels to accompany her to the State of the Union. But for that matter, no, Nancy Pelosi told the membership, look, if you're thinking you might walk out, don't walk in. Let all the attention, and these were his words, or her words, and by God, it's almost like somebody's listening to the program. You might recall that last night's bullshit nutritional supplement was slobbering, slippery elm. Yes. Well, lo and behold, at the Democratic caucus meeting, Nancy Pelosi told the membership of her caucus there in the House not to boo or catcall or holler out, you lie, even though every other goddamn sentence that comes out of Trump's mouth is going to be a lie. But instead, let the focus be on his, and these are her words, this is a quote, on his slobbering self. Now, I realize it's a common enough word in the English language, but still, what are the odds? Something profound is happening. This kind of stuff happens all the time. Something will happen here, and then the next day, like ripples from a very small but rounded and smooth stone tossed into a pond. We'll see it ripple out into the larger consciousness of the nation and world. If that's the case, hi, Nancy. Hope you're well. I understand the motivation there. And you're right. We don't need to fire up the maggots anytime soon. They're going to be fired up enough as it is. She's a smart coach, Nancy. She just told her players not to give the other side any bulletin board material. Were he to share her political philosophy, somebody like Nick Saban or whoever it is that coaches the University of Georgia or that guy over at Clemson or Pope Urban up at Ohio State would tell their players the same thing. Don't help fire up the other side. And for those of you like me who desperately yearn for impeachment, the same thing goes. We can talk about it here, but we don't need a whole lot of talk about it there. We just need to quietly go about the business of finding something like a 70% Democratic turnout to sufficient to overcome the inherent bias in gerrymandering, so that we can throw these anti-American asshats out of their majority and make them sit down and shut the fuck up. Then we can start talking impeachment. Okay. A couple of emails rolling in. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana says, Donnie Dumbass's dentures weren't loose. It's just hard for him to talk with Putin's dick in his mouth. Whoa! Let's try to go easy on the slurs here. I understand the import, you know. I understand what you're getting at. That he is a creepy little servile. Thing relative to Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, but let's go easy on that, because that could easily be perceived as an anti-gay slur, and we try not to do those sorts of things here. But I get your point, Jeff. I get your point indeed. I mean, you know what I prefer? If I go looking for for a metaphor or simile. They're separate things, but still. With which to compare the relationship between Big Bad Vladdy Daddy and his little creature, Trump. I'm more inclined. I'm more inclined to think of the relationship between, say, Dracula and Renfield. After all, Dracula's name was Vlad the Impaler, the historical guy, Vlad Tepes. And after all, Trump is a bug-eating little dirtbag. So I think the image works very, very well. But I get your point. And in a former time, I would have laughed merrily at that. And I'm not going, but I'm trying to be an evolving human being here. Yes. Meanwhile, Matt in San Francisco says, would it be possible if it ever got to a point where Trump was on trial in the Senate for treason, money laundering, that Barack Obama's could be the lawyer for the prosecution? Well, no, in terms of how those things tend to proceed. If you think back to the impeachment of Bill Clinton subsequent to the great Republican cleanness hunt, what happens is the people who lead the impeachment charge in the House are then referred to as the managers, as if they're a bunch of, you know, Billy Martins and Casey Stengels and Sparky Andersons you get the idea. And they go over to the Senate, and they act as the prosecution in the trial. It is presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and the jury is the Senate, which brings me to another story. We are off and running. No digressions into the grief occasioned by watching the biggest newspaper in a single state die this evening. It brings up another story indeed, because as I said, the Chief Justice presides over an impeachment hearing, and the Senate serves as a jury of 100. And so this morning, I just happened to see some sparkle farters having a fit over, who else, Joe Manchin. Because Joe Manchin is just an easy target. In many ways, he's for progressives, he's just he's a guy walking around perpetually begging to have his underwear pulled up over his head from behind. But some reporter from The Hill stuck a microphone or you know, was holding a pad and pencil. Who knows how this shit works? Probably a recording device of some sort. Stuck a microphone in Joe's face and said, Do you think he should be impeached, or you know, do you think whatever? And Joe Manchin said, or you know, if he fires Mueller, should he be blah blah blah? Based on the whole Andrew McCabe thing as it unfolded in the last 24 hours, the deputy director of the FBI having been defenestrated from his position in the world, wondering. Did he jump or was he pushed? So, Joe responded and said he doesn't think such talk is appropriate at this time, and that he hasn't judged the matter. And if you read all the way down to the bottom of the story from The Hill, you would find that Joe also said, that he also that he thinks Trump should leave Robert Mueller alone and let him do his job. Now, no one has been more consistently critical of the many and myriad failings of Joe Manchin than I. It's easy to do. If you've got so much as a single progressive sinew in your body, it's about the easiest thing you can do in American politics is point at Joe Manchin and say, some Democrat. But in this particular instance, he got it right. And I will say when people get it right. And Joe Manchin got it right. Because Joe Manchin, assuming he gets past the 2018 elections, and that is not at all a foregone conclusion, but assuming that he does, if there were to be an impeachment trial, which also presumes that the House of Representatives would wind up in Democratic hands, and see above, that ain't exactly a lead pipe cinch. But if the stars aligned and all of those things happened, then Joe would be one of the jurors, one of the 100 jurors sitting in judgment of a president being tried for impeachment in a case in which there must be which there must be 67 yay votes in order to remove the president, in order to find the president requiring of removal from office. And that's why I say he got it right. There's nobody out there who would want a juror who would declare before the evidence had ever been presented in court whether the defendant was innocent or guilty. At least I presume there isn't, based on the notion that we prefer that processes like that be fair and open and above board. I mean, we all saw what happened back, well, no, all of us didn't. Some of us weren't around. But during the trial of William Jefferson Clinton, upon an impeachment for lying about an act of fellatio, we watched as Republican senators marched to the microphones and declared Bill Clinton guilty before a shred of evidence had been adduced before that body. And there was a pretty general agreement that that was a dirty bit of a dirty bit of pool. So, lo and behold, I know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then, Joe Manchin got that right, much to the consternation of some progressive people. I add scare throat clearing around progressive there because, well, you know, I don't know how progressive you are if you're not interested enough in the political process to actually figure out how it freaking works. Right? Jeff writing back from Hillhole, Indiana. My apologies, Bob. Wasn't intending to offend anyone. I'm just a very frustrated individual that is near my breaking point. I'll try to keep future notes within the bounds of good taste as best I can. Love the show and keep up the great work. Thanks for all you do. Well, don't beat yourself up, Jeff. In eras past, things like that would have been de rigueur. But we're just trying to get a little better, and you know, since this is a program that is centered on the art of knowing words, it's always fun to look for things that are outside the mainstream of the ordinary insult. Yeah, like today when I tweeted at Don Jr. that if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. It's good stuff. I mean, I've been. That's an old one around here, but still. It's out of the ordinary. Ah, okay, okay. Now we, well, okay, so it wasn't the broadcast. It was Clarity's haiku based on the broadcast. Clarity haikuing yesterday. Slippery extract, slippery slobbery elm for aches and your ills. A perfect haiku. Meanwhile, a question comes in from Brother Deacon Asa. I'm feeling a bit anemic, what with all the talk about the skate of the unison and whatnot. Do you have any nutritional supplements I can use to make myself feel a wee bit better? Funny you should ask, Brother Deacon Asa, because we do. We absolutely do. In point of fact, this being a hard and cruel time of year here in the hills and hollers of West by Cold Trump Juniastan, where the approval rating of Donald J. Trump remains at 65%. No, I'm not kidding. I've asked the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter to focus on great herbal remedies of the Appalachians. And that's why this evening I am proud to tell you about, that's right, Swedenborgian Sweet Gum. Mm-hmm. Swedenborgian Sweet Gum is a brand new, old-time healing remedy from the hills and hollers of Appalachistan. The goodness of Sweet Gum with the weirdness of Swedenborgian philosophy. The single most philosophical nutritional supplement ever to be developed by Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Swedenborgian Sweet Gum. Sweet gum gathering is a time-honored tradition here in the hills, and it takes a lot of work. A lot of work indeed. And that's why a three-month supply of Swedenborgian Sweet Gum from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter will run you a rock solid $189.16. But with that 3 month supply, you'll also get a little bundle of test strips that you can use to learn what we already know here at the home offices of Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, that in fact Swedenborgian Sweet Gum has no nutritional benefit whatsoever. It is a completely bullshit nutritional supplement that everybody needs, at least everybody who thinks that the radio is where you go to find the things that make you feel better. Swedenborgian Sweet Gum, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. I've never been a big Sweet Gum fan, but the fact of the matter is, thanks to Swedenborgian Sweet Gum from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I can make sure that I've got all the sweet gum in my diet that I could possibly ever need on a daily basis. Yes, Swedenborgian Sweet Gum will put a sweetness back in your spirit. It'll put a gummy sort of sticky spring in your step. It'll enable you to do things like watch the State of the Union and not have your own state of well-being driven past its breaking point. Don't call now. Operators aren't standing by. Swedenborgian Sweet Gum, only from Horn Labs. At Horn Labs on Twitter, Horn Nutraceuticals, the makers of sex clams, and yes, slobbery sweet elm. Order yours today. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, this side up. FOBCODSWEETGUM on the bottom of your SHOE. Swedenborgian Sweet Gum, only from Horn Labs. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And if you think sweet gum only puts a spring in your step, well, you're not thinking near dirty enough. Meanwhile, we also need to check in with This Day in Horn History. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Horn 9000 time machine an entire decade into the past, all the way back to January the 30th, 2008. Of note is the fact that prior to today's program, January 30th, 2018, there's only been two other January 30th programs in the Horn's 12-year history. Bob opens the Prayer Meeting Wednesday program, rather dismayed. I don't know how it is that these all wind up being Prayer Meeting Wednesday programs. Bob opens the Prayer Meeting Wednesday program, rather dismayed, in light of the news that then-candidate John Edwards has decided to drop out of the 2008 Democratic primaries. Bob says John Edwards ended his campaign in the same place he started it, in the one place in the United States of America that has been more neglected than the rest, New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Bob then announces that there won't be any live programming for the upcoming few days because he's going to be getting on a plane for the first time since 9/11, wearing nothing but flip-flops and a Speedo. Boss Lady Agnes chimes in asking if she can watch the TSA perform a cavity search on Bob, to which Bob responds, "Baby, you get to pick the Speedo." Next up is the author of the book United States of Appalachia, Jeff Biggers, in conversation with Bob. Jeff's on discussing the foundations of Black History Month and how it ties into West Virginia in a serendipitous bout of synchronicity. And not knowing that he was in conversation with Jeff Biggers on this day 10 years ago, Bob was citing some of Jeff Biggers' work on Twitter earlier today. The goddess of irony, I'm telling you, she's the only one that counts. Email correspondence comes in from a listener saying he's done with the Horn because Bob is not supporting the one single candidate who can really put the United States on a different path, that candidate being cranky old Ron Paul. Further along during the program, Bob asks the community if they'd want to see the entire Horn team covering the 2008 Democratic Convention from a truly progressive point of view. In August of 2008, Bob gives a heartfelt testimony pursuant to the fact that coverage of presidential nomination conventions has become a mainly symbolic event, and that rarely does what happens during the convention make a difference in the general direction of the party platform anymore. Will Bob and fellow Horn hosts make it to the 2008 Democratic Convention? Will they be able to cover the convention from a progressive point of view and not just the cookie-cutter mainstream media soundbites? Stay tuned to This Day in Horn History segments as we follow Bob and fellow Hornies to see if they make it to the 2008 Democratic Convention in Denver, Colorado. And that was a look back into the ghost of Horn past, 3,654 days into antiquity for This Day in Horn History. Yes, I know how that comes out. So, And I made it back. I made it back from that trip. Earther says, "Oh, really, Bob? Next you're going to tell me I shouldn't have sent my girlfriend to get her pelvic exam results interpreted by the kebab shop owner. I would never tell you such a thing. That's your freedom of medical religion. Or from it. Or something." Right. So, and I'm trying to think where I was going. I know where I was going. I was leaving to go to Massachusetts. My first ever trip up there. Went on a speaking gig at Williams College. And had one of the most harrowing flights home from Dulles to Charleston. I can remember of any flight I can ever... It always seems like when you get on one of those little turboprop affairs that you're going to have an exciting ride. I've had two terrible rides into Charleston, one from Charlotte and one from Dulles, both on the same kind of aircraft. And, I mean, it felt like 30 seconds over Tokyo. It was just awful. But it was a good trip. It was a good trip indeed. So it is, it's State of the Union. It's So Tuesday. It is so Tuesday, so titanically Tuesday. And just as a sort of a a prophylaxis against what, for those of you who decide to actually watch this madness, I have to. I'll be lashed to the mast, and you can all just sort of envision the Tangerine Tiberius as a sort of siren with a cat's ass mouth wailing some sort of highly accented aria at the passing ship that is the Horn. I'll do that. I gotta do that. It won't be fun, but it comes with the turf. But I'll do it with a certain amount of foreknowledge. There have been rumors that he'll be low-key. I guess that means that Dr. Ronnie, Dr. Happy, won't be giving him his big old blast of Sudafed this evening. And he'll be sort of, he's supposed to be sort of like he was when he was in Davos there, low-key. Will he? Won't he? Well, that's part of the drama now, isn't it? But the fact of the matter is, it's how the media respond to it that really has more impact than what the Carotene Caligula actually says, because it's all going to be just a big old wagon load of horse shit. And toxic at that. And the little maggot Republicans will jump up and cheer every time, every 15 seconds, and the Democrats, except for probably like Joe Manchin, will sit on their hands. And given the fact that I don't think people in the Democratic House Caucus willfully cross Nancy Pelosi, I don't think there will be any histrionics along those lines. But the thing is, the for-profit media, who in ever so many ways helped get us here to where we are, well, before it starts and after it's over, if the Nectarine Nero manages to get through the speech without dropping trow and walking around from behind the podium and playing with himself for everyone to see, I checked in with Harris in Reno, and odds are running about 50-1 against that happening. With other presidents, it was like 1,000,000-1, but, well... Anyway, if he manages not to drop trow and play with himself in front of the assembled houses of Congress and distinguished guests and sergeant at arms and whatnot, the mandarins of the for-profit media, the punditocracy, will I don't care what he says, they will declare that he was presidential. They'll declare that he had pivoted. They'll declare that he had enunciated a bold vision for America's future. Philip says, I'm offering a cash reward for anyone who can name the drug cocktail that Dolt 45 will be on tonight, down to the dosage and frequency. Well, there's Aricept. A little Thorazine, a little Haldol, you know, a little up, a little down, just to kind of find him a just right spot in the middle. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But that's what's probably going to nauseate me the most. Is watching the fawning for-profit media pundit class bow and scrape, knowing full well who and what Trump was and is. I mean, Jesus, how bad is it? Well, there was a little hearing today in the Senate featuring the administrator of the Environmental Polluting Agency. Well, it used to be protection. It's polluting now. Namely, industry shill, industry hack, running dog of the hydrocarbon world, Scott Pollution Pruitt. And in the course of his testimony, he was confronted with something that he, Scott Pruitt, had said back in February of 2016. It was kind of a priceless moment, because he was challenged for something that he said in an interview back when he was a partisan of low energy Jeb Bush. Mm-hmm. And it's downright funny to contemplate. And he certainly did get himself embarrassed right nicely. Because Sheldon Whitehouse got hold of him. And Sheldon's pretty good at the whole questioning gig. Now, like I said, back when he was a Jeb Bush, Jebya, Bush partisan, he was interviewed on Tulsa radio station KFAQ. It was February the 4th, 2016, when Scott Pruitt said, "I believe that Donald Trump in the White House will be more abusive to the Constitution than Barack Obama." And that's saying a lot. Because, see, you got to remember, in Scott Pruitt's world, Barack Obama abused the Constitution by having skin darker than a brown paper bag. Yeah. He abused the Constitution. But he felt pretty confident that Trump would be an even bigger constitutional disaster. And, as he noted, and that's saying a lot. February 4th, 2016, Scott Pruitt has turned out to be a bit of a prophet, because Donald J. Trump is, in fact, a constitutional disaster, and we have been in a constitutional crisis, as we've noted here on this program, since somewhere around January the 20th, 2017, in the nanosecond at which Donald J. Trump, Geezer Disgustus's hand, came off the Bible. But it's funny, the Republicans were able to recall the misspelled Unium tickets, but Scott Pruitt couldn't recall ever having said that. Sheldon Whitehouse asked him, "Do you recall saying that?" Pruitt said, "I don't, Senator. I don't echo that today at all." Of course you don't. Of course you don't. Of course you don't remember it. A man with a memory that bad, what's he doing as the what's he doing as the administrator of the Environmental Polluting Air Protection Polluting Agency? What? And anybody? Bueller? A little help? Yeah. Now, Pruitt knew that having been humiliated in this fashion, and not really humiliated, but having had his words presented for the wide, wide world to hear, because some people who do that journalism thing had dug into what he had said, Well, they had to put out a statement over at the EPA. Yes, Scott Pruitt used the resources, the taxpayer resources of the Environmental Protection Agency, to put out a statement disavowing what he had previously said. You know what? That sounds a little sketchy, doesn't it? That sounds like, oh, I don't know, a congressman using the franking privilege to send out campaign ads or something. Congresspeople can't do that. But the EPA, using your money, said, after meeting him and now having the honor of working for him, it is abundantly clear that President Trump is the most consequential leader of our time. No one has done more to advance the rule of law than President Trump. The president has liberated our country from the political class and given America back to the white people. Oops, sorry, I added the white part. True, though, isn't it? Yes, it is. At that point in time, Scott Pruitt, they had a little trouble getting that down, typing that up as he dictated it, because his voice was muffled because his nose was so far up Donald Trump's rectum. It took an entire package of baby Diddums wipes from the dollar store to get all the brown off of his nose once he was done saying that. Most consequential leader of our time? The president who destroyed the Republican form of government? Yeah, okay. Consequential does not mean good. Yeah, Earther gets it, pointing out, if a hurricane rips the roof off of my house and somebody dies, that's consequential, right? Right. You know what? People in Puerto Rico would probably agree that he's been a very consequential president. Because thanks to him, the island still largely doesn't have electricity. Months and months and months and months after the hurricane struck. Yeah. Consequential. A couple of notes coming in over the course of the filibuster. Obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening coming from Marty. Comes from The Next Generation. It's too bad Pelosi has apparently put the kibosh on the idea of Dems pulling a discommendation of Trump. It'd be a delight to have the Dems cross arms and turn their backs. Well, it would make for good theater, Marty. But it's bulletin board material. I mean, do you want your beloved Broncos to give bulletin board material to whomever they're lining up on a given Sunday, or lining up against? You get the point. As Clarity points out, truth or consequences, it's not a game now. No. It ain't funny. So we've got, we've got some theater coming this evening, without a doubt. If you can't tolerate it, I'll take one for the team, and we'll maybe talk about it tomorrow evening. Me, I'll be waiting for the obligatory nausea-inducing reference to
clean coal. Clean, beautiful, sexy coal that reminds me of my daughter because it's so sexy.
I'll be waiting for that. Hey, by the way, the mayor of San Juan will be in attendance this evening, courtesy of a ticket provided her by Kirsten Gillibrand. You know who won't be in attendance this evening? Senator Al Franken, also courtesy of Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. You know, just saying. Meanwhile, note coming from Ron and Raleigh. You might want to watch Sam Cedar's live coverage of the State of the Disunion as his on his YouTube channel with commentary by Judy Gold. I'm sure the commentary will be pithier than the white bread milk toast response from the Democrats. Well, assuming that Malloy is live, I'll be tuned into Malloy because most likely in rare form for such a thing. Things like this, they bring out the absolute best in Mike. So we've got, you know, I think we've covered covered a lot of the bases. Not all of them. But a number of them. By the way, kudos coming from Steve in New York for the extra photos that Brother Deacon Asa has loaded of West Virginia over at headon.live. Steve says, wow, West Virginia is as beautiful as I remember it. Didn't the motto used to be wild, wet, and wonderful or something? Just wild and wonderful. Not the wet part wasn't in there. That might have been some other thing that had that sort of a, you know, motto. Now, here's something interesting. After having said, yes, I did, and then taken $130,000in payoff, Stormy Daniels now says that she and the president didn't do nothing, despite the interview that she gave to, what was it? In Touch magazine, and she's now referring to the Wall Street Journal, which broke the story as an overseas tabloid. Well, that's owned by an overseas. Well, nah. Rupert doesn't live in Australia now, does he? Where's Rupert live? But she, apparently, she got a letter from somebody, like a lawyer, maybe, who had something to do with giving her that $130,000 payoff. Over the past few weeks, I've been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many, many, many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 2011, 2016, 2017, and now again in 2018. I'm not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I'm denying this affair because it never happened. I will have no further comment on this matter. Please feel free to check me out on Instagram at her handle. Somebody must have sent her a letter saying, you know, there was a non-disclosure agreement in that came with that $130,000 check, Stormy. I imagine you've run through the $130,000 by now, haven't you? Funny thing is, she didn't deny the affair. She explicitly discussed the affair in the In Touch magazine interview. But in 2018, well, let's just say that facts are fluid things. All you got to do is say, fake news, every bit as fake as my tits. Okay, that was probably out of hand. But I mean, they are. But you know what I mean. And it all just goes away. Just like we heard Donald Trump on the Access Hollywood recording. And then he turned around and said, that wasn't me, I wasn't saying that. Tom Tomorrow has a brilliant comic you might want to look up dealing with that very issue. Our buddy Bob down in Texas sent it to me. In all truth, I have more interest in seeing what Representative Joseph P. Kennedy III has to say about the matter. I have more interest in what Representative Maxine Waters has to say in her response to Trump's attempt at a State of the Union. I've got far more interest in that. But you got to get through the State of the Union first. Well, there's a bunch of news to take up our interest in the next couple of hours. We'll take our top of the hour break and call this the end to the filibobster. Agnes just sent me a story, courtesy of PBS NewsHour and Yamiche Alcindor. Headline, Trump says it will be hard to unify country without a major event. He said he wants to unite the country amid tremendous divisiveness and hopes he can do so without a traumatic event affecting Americans. I would love to be able to bring back our country into a great form of unity without a major event where people pull together that's hard to do, but I would like to do it without that major event because usually that major event is not a good thing. I want to see our country united. I want to bring our country back from a tremendous divisiveness which has taken place not just over 1 year, over many years, including the Bush years, not just Obama, who was born in Kenya. No, I added that last part. We're being forewarned that his paranoid rambling will take about 50 minutes. It'll then take another hour to even plumb the depths of perfidy of which the for-profit media pundit, nearly always wrong punditocracy, will require in order to successfully perform with their noses a presidential colonoscopy. Oy. Well, okay. Robert from Australia just wants to remind us all, Rupert's no longer an Australian. Murdoch hasn't been an Australian citizen for decades. He gave it up to become an American in 1985 so he could buy a whole bunch of stuff. Sorry, Robert. He'll always be Australian to us. Just like Ken Ham. Not saying. Just saying. A major event. Says Steve in New York. The Saturday evening massacre has begun in slow motion, but everyone knew that. Well, I even saw a rumor circulating last night that by about this time tonight, he might actually go ahead and fire Rod Rosenstein, because Rod Rosenstein is next in the Tangerine Tiberius's crosshairs. It's coming. Scott and Punky with a note. Major event. I got your major event. It's bad right here. Electoral college count, November 8th, 2016. Yeah, but that's not going to bring the country together. He thinks that if he can just have himself a little 9/11 or something, that we'll all come together and sing Kumbaya right behind him. Not me, baby. Not me. If he was a fascist before the major event, he'll be a fascist after the major event. And newsflash, he's a fascist. And he's a wannabe dictator, a two-bit tin pot tyrant. And neither leopards change their spots nor do skunks change their stripes. Doesn't happen. So if you want to get in on the conversation radio angle aspect of this program, you know how. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype. If you've never sent me a contact request, send it to Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Okay. And, the first-time callers are always welcome. But you know that. Robert in Australia says, fair suck on the pineapple donut, Bob. He's been a Yank for 33 years. How long does it take? Never. Never. Look. If we sent you George W. Bush and he became an Australian citizen, no, Dick Cheney. If we sent you Dick Cheney and he became an Australian citizen, would you say, well, he's one of us now. Hand him his shrimp. No, you wouldn't. You'd say, that goddamn Yank, for the next umpteen years. I mean, it's just how it is. I mean, look, we still think, I mean, nobody particularly despises Keith Urban that I can think of, but we still think of him as being Australian. And he's not even particularly odious. But he's Australian. Just, you know, is. Yeah, it's like here in Appalachia. You could live in, well, a good example, my parents moving to Alabama in 1960. Lived there, well, my mother for 37 years. And those good Southern folks, you're not from around here, are you? Y'all have fun going back to Virginia now. I've got an aunt in Roanoke. It's just human nature, Robert. That's all. So, break time, and also on the way, the Green News Report featuring Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Oh, now there's a lovely thought, Brother Deacon Asa says. I can think of a fantastic major event that can unify a large plurality of the country. The impeachment of Donald J. Trump. Well, looking at his approval numbers, yeah, that would get a good 60-plus percent of the United States solidly together. But when he says he wants to cure the divisiveness of the United States, that means he wants us to make nice with his little Nazi friends. And as long as the hardcore cancerous, not dead-ender base of Donald Trump support is, you know, Nazis and Klansmen, sorry, I'm going to stay divided because, for the life of me, I can't find anything that recommends the notion of standing shoulder to shoulder with a goddamn bunch of Nazis. You? I didn't think so. So, yep, break time. And after that, conversations. This is listener-supported conversation radio, fundraising-free broadcasting through the end of January. I'm Bob.
It's Tuesday, January 30, 2018.
Do you believe in climate change?
Debunking President Trump's latest lies and disinformation on climate science.
The United States is not just exporting energy, we're exporting freedom.
The U.S. is now importing less oil than ever before, thanks to Obama. EPA reversal on Pebble Mine is qualified good news for Alaska. Plus,
while the main impetus for this year's forward movement of the clock was the perilous nuclear situation, climate change very much remains a serious and worsening threat.
Thanks to Trump, the doomsday clock has now been moved up to 2 minutes to midnight.
Thanks, Trump. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There is a cooling and there's a heating.
Oh, Jesus, God in heaven. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the President of the United States, went on British TV and made a complete jackass out of himself and these United States.
Yes, he did. In a semi-coherent interview on Sunday with Piers Morgan for Britain's ITV, Trump exposed his complete ignorance of climate science and U.S. climate policies. You could see his mind reaching to remember what he's been told by Fox News as he lied about how the term climate change was coined, lied about the melting ice caps, and exposed his ignorance on science, which would be comical if it weren't so dangerous.
Do you believe in climate change? Do you think it exists?
There is a cooling and there's a heating. I mean, look, it used to not be climate change. It used to be global warming.
Right?
The ice caps were going to melt. They were going to be gone by now. But now they're setting records, okay? They're at a record level.
Okay, so the ice caps are setting records, but it's for melting. According to NASA, sea ice at both poles hit record lows last year. That's both the Arctic and the Antarctic. And it's been called climate change for more than a century.
You mean they didn't just come up with that because global warming was no longer working?
No, certainly not. And NASA, just over a week ago, announced that 2017 was the second hottest year ever recorded. So no, the nonstop upward temperature trend for the planet that has been going on for decades continues.
Well, who listens to him? He's only the president of the United States.
And I just want to note for the record that corporate media needs to stop fixating on whether Republican politicians believe in climate change, and they need to start asking what they plan to do about it.
Good point.
Meanwhile, some good news for Alaskans. In a surprise reversal late Friday, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency announced that it will restore Obama-era restrictions blocking the controversial proposed Pebble Mine.
What?
A massive copper and gold mine that the Obama EPA had determined would irreparably harm the pristine Bristol Bay watershed, home to the world's largest salmon fishery. However, Think Progress reports that EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt did not outright ban the proposed mine. Instead, Pruitt's statement says, quote, the decision neither deters nor derails the application process of the Pebble Partners' proposed project.
So here we're trying to give some credit for something to Scott Pruitt at the EPA. We can't even do that, huh?
Unfortunately, no. Alaska, however, may get an exemption from the Trump administration's plan to expand offshore drilling. That's because the state's Republican senators and Republican House representative have asked Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to remove much of Alaska's waters from the offshore expansion, similar to how Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott asked for Florida to be excused.
Funny how that happens.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is importing less oil than ever before. Net imports of crude oil products into the United States has dropped to the lowest level on record since 1973. And according to U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry at the World Economic Forum in Davos,
we are now the number one oil and gas producing nation on the face of the earth.
That's thanks to the surge in domestic shale oil production begun under the Obama administration. The Trump administration is pushing the world now to use more oil and export even more of our climate disaster to the world, directly contradictory to climate scientists' warnings that we must get to net zero carbon emissions as soon as possible to avoid catastrophic impacts.
Well,
there is a cooling and there's a heating.
Which brings us to the doomsday clock, the iconic symbol that represents the likelihood of man-made global catastrophe, which last week the scientists at the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists moved up to 2 minutes to midnight for the first time since 1953. In doing so, the Bulletin scientists condemned not only President Trump's aggressive rhetoric on nuclear weapons and North Korea, but climate scientist Sivan Kartha, a member of the Bulletin's board, also put the blame squarely on Donald Trump's rollback of U.S. climate policies.
And of course, he also formally declared his intention to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. In other words, the U.S. president has done his best to follow through on his stated intention of derailing U.S. climate action.
Promises made, promises kept. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang down. After midnight, we're gonna chug a love and shout.
Yeah. Clapton is God. A couple of headlines before we run over to the phones, because you can't just let something like this breeze by. Courtesy of CNN, headline, couple gets parasitic worms in feet from beach. Yes, they apparently went to the beach, bought some new feet, and the feet had worms in them. Couple gets parasitic worms in feet from beach. But for me, the real winner is woman denied emotional support from peacock on United flight. Yeah, you heard that right. The madness of emotional support animals has now extended to the avian world. And a woman actually thought she could claim that her peacock was an emotional support animal and pay for a second ticket and bring it on the plane with her. No, really. Because Merca. Mm-hmm. They were trying to leave Newark, New Jersey. Even the peacocks are leaving New Jersey. I'll get hate mail from the New Jersey contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation for that. Woman denied emotional support. How do you get emotional support from a critter with a brain the size of a fucking BB? Just asking. But this business of people walking around with chihuahuas in purses and Yorkshire terriers in backpacks and claiming they're emotional support animals and therefore should be allowed into the restaurant has gotten out of hand. It just has. Meanwhile, quick note coming in from our buddy, the Angry Architect, down over in Australia. Whether you call him Australian or American, we can put him out of business with new improved Aussie Oxen Pea. I can always go into the export business. However, I'm not sure of the health benefits. Well, I'll contact the hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals and see what we can do there. You're darn right. You're darn right I will. Aussie Oxen Pea. That's cowbell worthy. Yep. Okay, so over to the phones, and let's see who we've got awaiting on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Howdy do.
This is your friend from Colorado Springs again, and I thought it only appropriate to call tonight.
This time I recognize the voice. It only takes one time to bring it all back.
That's right. You can never forget. You can check out anytime you like, but, you know, you never can leave.
I get it.
But, yeah, the woman with the bird... she was a Trump supporter, so the pea brain went right along with it. It was plenty of emotional support.
What you're saying is the bird wasn't the only one with a brain the size of a BB.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure Scott in California will appreciate.
Oh no, I just got hate mail. I just got hate mail from Scott. Brain the size of a BB. Punky heard that.
Yeah, now Punky's going to refuse to shit on something else. Oh, well. I gotta send Scott some copies of the Gazette and see if Punky will bother the Colorado Springs Gazette. Gotta see if Punky would shit on that, because I doubt she would. It's a right wing rag.
Well, you know, the thing is that you may have just opened the door, Kevin, to a whole new thing here at the Horn. Send Scott in San Diego your local newspaper and see if Punky will accept it as a birdcage liner.
And, well, you know, if we do that with every newspaper in America, we should get a good top 10 list of both ways.
Well, and we'll get a better sense of Punky's preference in journalism. I mean, you know, Washington Post, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, New Orleans Times-Picayune. Is the Seattle Post-Intelligencer still in? The Chronicle, the L.A. Times, and we could remember when they had that octopus that was picking winners in the World Cup.
Oh yeah,
it could be like that. Or hey,
well, I was actually going to suggest that since Super Bowl Sunday's coming up.
Exactly.
You know, well, one logo of the Patriots in the bottom of the bird cage and a logo of the Eagles in the other, and, you know.
Well, what we need to do is get a copy of the Boston Globe and a copy of the Philadelphia Inquirer into Scott's hands, and we can probably pick the winner that way. The question is, will shitting on the newspaper mean they win or lose? That's where it gets confusing.
Yeah, and I'm like you. I don't want to see the Patriots win. I'm sorry, I've had enough.
But it's kind of a foregone. I mean, I know that's why they play the game and everything, but it's kind of a foregone conclusion, isn't it?
I hope not. I hope not. Maybe not. You never can tell. Tom Brady might get a hangnail in the first quarter and not be able to play or something. Who knows? And their backup is Brian Hoyer, formerly of the Browns. So, you know, why they traded Garofalo and why they didn't wait till after the season, I do not understand. Because wouldn't you want a dependable backup if something did happen to Brady?
You mean like Colin Kaepernick or something?
Oh, well, you know, Colin Kaepernick is not a dependable backup because he kneels for the national anthem instead of stands.
Right. No matter what kind of... you know, he had a better quarterback rating in the playoffs that he played in than just about anybody except Brady in the previous brace of playoffs. But he's unreliable because he might have a sudden outbreak of lack of obsequy to white America.
Yep. So you know, and of course. There's no collusion at all between 32 NFL owners, of which probably 20 of which need a starting quarterback, much less a backup quarterback. But, you know, Colin Kaepernick is just so far down on that list. You would rather have any number of other guys like Brian Hoyer, Tom Savage, I can't think of the guy's name here in Denver now for some reason.
At least it ain't Tim Tebow.
Well, you know, I could foresee Tebow getting a gig back in the NFL before Kaepernick.
Oh yeah, I mean, no, he would. You know, he would. Yeah, absolutely.
Tebow's a good God-fearing, honest-to-good Christian who would never kneel for the flag.
No, he only kneels in the end zone in pathetic public displays of bullshit piety. Right.
Yep. So, but Hey, he's got an invite to Major League Training Camp this year, Bob, so, you know, that'll increase ticket.
Oh, yeah, somebody will show up somewhere.
And yes, I am a Mets fan, so, you know, and I was a Gators fan. I loved Tebow when he played for the Gators. I loved him when he played for the Broncos. I loved him when he played for the Mets minor league team. If he ever plays for the major league team, it will be because they want ticket sales, not because of the talent. I will admit that.
What position does he play?
Baseball. What did you say?
What position does he play in baseball?
I think the outfield. He may have played other positions in college or high school, rather, because he didn't play college ball. He played football in college. He hasn't played baseball in something like 10 years before he went to the minor leagues day ball for the Mets. And that was what was... Now, if Tebow didn't have money before he signed in the NFL, this would never be happening because he would be forced to live on that signing bonus he got from the Broncos and the salary he got for a couple of years of playing with them. But he had money before he came to the NFL. And, you know, not that he wouldn't. He's got a gig on the SEC network on ESPN. Anyway, so, but still, this would not be happening had he just played a year or two for the Broncos and then he was done in the NFL. He couldn't afford it on what you make for a minor league salary, which is pitifully low for anybody that's not a first, second, or third round draft pick in baseball. Look it up if you don't believe me. Some of these kids, yeah, they get stipends for food and that, I realize that, but, you know, they do not make any more than someone working a 9-to-5 job in the low minor leagues. And not that I'm complaining, because I would love to be making what they make in the low minor leagues. Would be better than what I'm getting now. But I should be happy for that.
Right, and free bus rides.
Well, yeah. I can't even get that, Bob. I pay... Our paratransit system here charges me $3.50 a ride, whether I go across the street or across the city. Every time my little feet get in the vehicle, it's $3.50 a ride. And, you know, you're talking about people that are on disability, and a lot of them make a whole lot less than me. And, you know, I don't understand it. But I do because of where I live and because of where we are in our country. We've got the absolute bestest, mostest, incrediblest president in the whole wide world, Bob.
God bless him.
And you'll find that out tonight on the State of the Union. I'm sure he will, and he will declare himself as such. And that's why I, you know, scheduled the prep for tonight, because shit in needs to come shit out. It's the perfect night. He can say bullshit, and I can be pumping it right back out as quick as it comes in. So.
And by the way, in answer to your previous question, Ron and Raleigh lets us know, Tebow had a net worth of $4 million as of May 2017.
Yep. For only $4 million as of May, his signing bonus with the Broncos, I'd have to look it up to be sure. Maybe he was even a first-round pick, come to think of it, because Josh McDaniels was coach back then, and by God, they decided they wanted Tebow. So, anyway, I doubt the $4 million. Tebow went to school at Florida, and you know nobody in college ever gets money under the table for playing football.
Oh, no, there are no $100 handshakes in Gainesville.
No.
Especially not.
I can vouch for that.
Especially not when Pope Urban was coaching down there.
Oh God. Yeah. And then he said he couldn't coach anymore to get out of the contract at Florida and went up to Ohio State and probably went back to coaching. So, you know, what does that tell you? Which is also a sad thing. It extends not only to women's gymnasts and doctors molesting them, but it extends all across college athletics. You saw it in the recent Nike basketball scandal, too. But Trump would only call that, we're open for business. You know, that's the sickening part of it, is there's no accountability. The NCAA slaps these people on the wrist for stuff like that. They'll give a college a few years of probation. But in the case of Joe Paterno at Penn State, it was deemed too much to actually give Penn State the amount of probation they originally did. So, you know, they had to cut that back before the poor PSU fans revolted, you know. And I would imagine we'll see something similar with the Olympics and the this whole gymnastics scandal. I hate to even call it a scandal. Call it for what it is, the allowance of a pedophilia doctor. You know, that's what it was. It was the enabling of a doctor to do that. And that, you know, do I sound cynical tonight by any chance? I'm kind of getting the impression I'm sounding way too cynical about things.
No, I'd say you're pretty much right in the middle of the road for cynicism, at least with our happy little community. By the way, Isaac pointed out that the other thing that contributed to Tebow's net worth was his ESPN contract, in which he pontificated with his great wisdom about college football.
Yep. Everybody's got to have a second job these days, Bob. Just think of it like that.
Hey, wait a minute. That's good. Everybody's got to have a second job.
He was only picking himself up by his own bootstraps. So, you know, I didn't have too much other to add. I just wanted to kind of... I got to give Desi and Brad props tonight. That was great what they did tonight. And I just loved that whole edition of the Green News Report, how they brought up so many of these things that are going on. And I am a little bit worried about Mr. Trump saying we need a major event. And I'm sure all in the Horn community are aware tonight, tomorrow morning will be a super blue blood moon. So
yeah, I saw that sucker rise just before airtime. And
yep.
I mean it was big as an overripe cantaloupe in the sky. And just bone white in the frozen air. It was beautiful.
Okay. So, well, you made me feel a little bit better because I was going to ask you, was it blue or red or orange? Because if it had written orange, you know, I think I might just have to go down to the cellar and hunker down for the next 20 or so years.
Well, I'm surprised that that old fraud Hagee isn't fundraising on it. The fact of the matter is, this moon has a lot of names. It's a snow moon in indigenous terminology. The further west you go on the North American continent, it's a blood moon. It's a blue moon because it's the second full moon of a month, and there's a lunar eclipse.
Yep.
And it's super because it's a little bit closer to the Earth in terms of the orbit of the moon around the... Yeah. So it's got many things going for it, and that whole combination hasn't happened in about 152 years. So yeah, I'm treating it like a little birthday present from the universe to me.
And I did a little bit of researching on that, Bob. 152 years ago was 1866. Now in 1866, the Civil War had just ended. We had ourselves a brand new president, courtesy of the John Wilkes Booth. So maybe this moon won't be what so many cultures deem as a catastrophic event for bear. Maybe this super blue blood moon will herald good tidings of great joy. And now I'm thinking magically, aren't I?
That's okay. Whatever get you know, it's like what John Lennon said: whatever gets you through the night.
One could wish, you know. But then, if we were to get a new president, whether it's through impeachment or death by orange, that would only mean Pence for president.
Yeah, but like I said before, Kevin, that doesn't. I discussed this last night with Jim. When you've got, you know, when you're eating up with cancer, when you've got a tumor that's got to come out, then you don't say, yeah, but I've also got athlete's foot. You don't. You know. You deal with the crisis at hand.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And so, yeah, Trump's, Pence is an idiot and a theocrat and an evangelical and a Taliban Christian who can't even manage to get through noting Holocaust remembrance without working in some Christian eschatology and doing an altar call for the Jews. Yeah, sure. But the fact of the matter is, we have a no-kidding foreign agent in the Oval Office. I'm convinced. Yeah. I'm convinced of it.
I don't disagree with you. It's just scary to think that the presidential line of succession goes Trump, Pence, Ryan.
Well, let's finish that out. Trump, Pence, Ryan, and then that's barely alive senator from Mississippi, I think. Thad Cochran, maybe?
Maybe. I forget.
Because it goes Speaker of the House, President Pro Tem of the Senate.
But the
fact of the matter is, it really doesn't. None of this has any relevance really at all, and that's not a criticism, Kevin. None of that has any relevance unless we get a Congress that's willing to actually honor its oath to the Constitution of the United States.
Yep.
And we don't have one of those right now. I don't know if you happen to notice it, but Paul Ryan had a little Q&A this morning about the memo.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he used some curious language. He said the FBI needed to be cleansed. Cleansed.
Yep.
He might as well have gone ahead and said purged, because that's what he's talking about. These people have no interest in being a country in which the people rule the government.
No, they have no. It's like you were saying the other day. They have no interest in national security. I think back to Bush with Valerie Plame. Same thing, you know. So we added an agent. No big deal. Except that she might have gotten killed for being outed. No big deal. How many other agents did get killed because of the tie-ins to her? That doesn't bother them, though. They're not the ones being killed. So, you know, I'm trying to think, Bob.
And by the way, I was wrong. It's not that half-alive senator from Mississippi. It is, in fact, that walking blob of hypocrisy, Orrin Hatch.
He's President Pro Tem.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, Randy and PA. Yeah. Randy and PA corrected me on that.
Yep. How far down would we have to go to get a Democrat? Something like 16th, 17th on the list.
It's way deep, because the principle being that it's leadership based. I mean, it would have to be something on the order of, I don't know if you've ever seen it, an Alec Guinness comedy from the immediate post-war years in Great Britain called Kind Hearts and Coronets. It'd be like the plot from Kind Hearts and Coronets, where one character is going through and bumping off all of the potential heirs to a particular earldom or dukedom or fiefdom or what the hell ever, and you got to go a long way down before you get anybody resembling a Democrat, if
yep.
at all. Yeah.
Well, and what scares me is, because of the Republicans' lack of concern for the Constitution and a republic democracy, it very well could happen that the Russians could interfere in the next election coming up in 2018. And, you know, doesn't now even have to be voter suppression, just good old-fashioned manipulation of the vote, period. Hack into the computer system, which I'm sure has been done before anyway. I really, truly never understood what was wrong with counting the votes by hand on a paper ballot that didn't have any hanging chads or hanging anything.
Well, it didn't provide a high enough profit margin for the people. Everything has to be capitalized in this country.
Sure.
And so, you know, sure, there are some print shops that get print jobs printing ballots, but my God, there's a lot more money to be had in writing code and coming up with video game voting machines that can be hacked by a 12-year-old in Minsk, and you know, sure.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right, yeah. When you get polls, I think you cited one. I heard another one the other day. His popularity rating is about 34%. So that's 67%. Sorry about that.
Yeah, 33% and 67. You're right, yeah.
So when you get a 67% disapproval rating, you're telling me that wouldn't translate into a hell of a blue tsunami in 2018. I can't imagine that even between now and the election in November that Republicans could offset that type of unpopularity in a president. Or if the Democrats had that unpopular, same thing.
But you know? But you have to take into account, I mean, look. Consider the Alabama special election of last month.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Doug Jones managed to win, and of course we all understand he suffers from a horrible deficit of ideological purity, but he won. And he won because there were 20,000 write-in Republican voters who didn't vote for Moore. But the thing is, yep. He won. But the way that, and he won statewide. He won in Mobile, he won in Montgomery, he won in Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, Huntsville, Florence, Muscle Shoals, Sheffield, Decatur. I mean, he won everywhere.
Yep.
But even so, had that been a series of House races, he would have won only one of the seven House districts in the state of Alabama.
Right.
And in what, 2016, 2014, 2012, Democrats won, if you just aggregate the popular vote, Democrats outpolled Republicans by a wide margin in House races. But because of the summary effect of gerrymandering, they didn't get anywhere near a majority. In fact,
sure.
Matters went from bad to worse.
Yep.
And so that has to be overcome. That's why I keep saying to all, and I'm not trying to just pee on Wheaties for the sake of emptying my bladder. But that's why I keep saying that this blue wave that people expect is going to take a hell of a lot more participation and a hell of a lot more dedicated and unified turnout than anybody's even talking about. The Jones campaign in Alabama said, look, we need 25%. And they cited some unlikely turnout number. Turns out that thanks to African Americans in Alabama, they got it. And, yep. and that's what they had to have to overcome the 63% of white women who voted for the child molester and the 72% of white men who voted for the child molester. And nobody and people who say, well, yeah, but that was Alabama. You do that at your peril. You say that at your peril because every district in this country has been gerrymandered to a point of almost unrecognizability. There's a district in Ohio that has a Democrat running in it, and he's an anti-abortion, anti-feminist, pro-gun Democrat. And, you know, that may be what it takes to get a majority. But I don't know. All those things feel like deal breakers for me. But he's in Columbus, and yet, or in the Columbus area, but it's just about had all the African Americans gerrymandered right out of it to make it a safe Republican seat. On the other hand, you've got a district in western Missouri that had white folks gerrymandered into it to yep. dilute the African American vote from that metropolitan area.
Yep.
And it's been done everywhere. It's been done in California. It's been done in Colorado. And in order to overcome that, tsunami, tidal wave, those are the right images to use. But the question is, what does that mean? And I'm suggesting that it means that you need a Democratic turnout somewhere between 60 and 70% in all of those districts if you're going to throw out entrenched incumbent Republicans.
And if you get that Democratic turnout of 60-70%, you then need to make sure that they stay in line and vote and put up with the crap they have to go through to vote because that's the other way they suppress the vote, is make the voting lines long, make them difficult, make it difficult to register, vote, get to the polls. Bob.
Yeah, that's what's called soft disenfranchisement.
That's right.
Yeah, there's nobody saying that you've got to read a Chinese restaurant menu in Chinese or sign your name with on wax paper with a ballpoint pen. That shit is so last century. This is the kind of dirty tricks that are used that quietly keep people away from the polls. A majority, a really seriously white majority precinct has, 20 voting machines, and a majority African-American precinct has 2. That's that kind of, yeah.
Yep. Or my particular voting district here in Colorado Springs precinct used to be right down the road from me. I knew the exact boundaries of the precinct, where the voting place was the perfect epicenter of that. Nobody had to drive or walk too far. They moved it all the way on the other side of the city. It was several miles away now. And people working, where it was convenient to go to the poll and vote before you went to work or when you came home, one of the two, it now suddenly became a challenge to go there and vote.
Well,
get there on time.
Right. Consider this. The Washington Post did an analysis of the open seats that Democrats need to carry if they want to take back the House. And 2/3 of those seats, according to this analysis, are out of reach of any Democrat because of the gerrymandering of those districts.
Yep.
So that, you'd have to have, a crazy level of turnout. I'm talking about really 70-80% to even have a chance. That's not anything that even remotely resembles democracy.
That's right.
That's just a rigged game. That's just fucking Powerball, okay? I mean, that's one in 229 million chance of hitting the jackpot.
Yep.
And the Republicans don't even hide from it now. Politico interviewed a guy by the name of Representative Steve Stivers from Ohio, and he said, I think we need to be smart about how and where we use everybody, every surrogate, whether it's the president, vice president, other members of Congress, other folks who want to help. We're not going to give out our battle plans to everybody, but we're going to make sure we're smart about the way we use folks. Okay, great. But the bottom line is, and Stivers said this, I think it starts with the congressional lines.
Yep.
In other words, the first line of defense of their majority is making sure that the vote is manipulated in such a way that no matter how many Democrats turn out, they can't turn out the incumbent or they can't turn out the Republican in an open seat challenge.
Yep.
And that does not bode well. And again, I don't want to depress anybody. I don't want to keep anybody from being active or being activist. But the fact of the matter is, you have to go into this kind of thing with your eyes wide open.
Yeah. Yep, and you have to realize that it's an uphill battle to start with and go from there. There are places that can be changed, especially on the local level. But I saw it in Colorado Springs this past year with our local city council. There were a couple, at least to the left a tad bit, candidates elected where there hadn't been recently, because even the conservative populace here was not happy with the way things were going. So, but that like said, that can't happen in Doug Lamborn's district. It's been gerrymandered. So that's how you get the freak, what's his name, the religious nut that has the In Jesus' Name We Pray or something.
Oh, Chappie.
Chappie, yeah, there you go. That's how you get a Chappie out of that district.
Sure.
So,
and that is by design, Kevin.
Yep. So anyway. And what's the deal, by the way, Bob? Do you understand this multi-democratic response to the photo? I heard Waters and who else was it? Maxine Waters. There were several Democrats.
The official Democratic response will be by Joseph P. Kennedy III.
Right, by Kennedy.
And then Waters is doing one.
There
will be one by Maxine Waters, and I think Bernie's going to do one.
Yep.
And they all represent different movements or different constituencies inside the Democratic Party, or in the case of, Bernie, outside the Democratic Party.
Yep.
I mean, I guess he's giving the independent response or something. And that's not a slur on Bernie. It's just, Bernie's not a Democrat. So he can't very well give the Democratic response.
Yep. Well, I'm not complaining because as many voices as there is to counter the Trump effect, I'm all for. I just wondered why there were so many Democrats responding to it from so many different angles.
I hope
that goes back to what you're saying about unity in some ways, I think. I want to see a more unified party, not a less one. And in saying that, I fully realize I'm not there with unity with the whole Democratic Party yet, and probably never will be, but not for the sake of the party, but for the sake of the nation. You better believe if it was Joe Manchin running for president against Trump, I'd be voting for Joe Manchin. I mean, I'm like you. I'll vote for almost anyone running against Trump. And if the choice was actually worse than Trump, well, then I just won't vote. Pointless at that point, but...
I'm a partisan, and I know it, and I simply cannot conceive that there is anybody on the D side of the aisle who is worse than the worst human being ever to occupy the Oval Office up to this moment.
No, I cannot think of a, off the top of my head, I can't think of a single person. Democrat, Republican, Independent, Socialist, people in the past, such as Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, yeah, but given time and the ability, the means to do it, yeah, maybe Trump, he's the bestest at everything, so I'm sure he's thinking about things like that, and that's the scary part. So... yeah, I'll gladly unify with the Democratic Party when it comes time to at the convention, when it comes time for electing a presidential candidate again, because I have to be reminded, like you reminded us yesterday, Bob, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. She did not lose the election.
It just doesn't matter within the constitutional framework. And as I've mentioned on a couple of occasions, it still just drives me nuts. Where is the introduction of a constitutional amendment to eliminate the Electoral College? Where is it?
Yep. Well, you can bet it would have already been introduced had it been the other way around, and had it been a Democrat elected to the presidency that way.
Yeah, but it never works out that way. It's always the Democrat who takes it on the chin.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, the Electoral College has the filthy, vile taint of slavery all over it. Why? Why? In the 21st century, is there not a single piece of legislation to repeal the Electoral College pending, whether it moves or not, pending in either House of Congress? Why?
Can't answer that.
Well, I can. At least I know what the so-called conventional wisdom is on it. Well, if we did that, it would water down the votes of people in little tiny states, and it would make California, New York, and Texas the biggest jewels, and that's the only place anybody would campaign. Well, bullshit, okay? This is the age of the electronic media. We can watch a stump speech being given in Cucamonga as well as we can in little tiny New Hampshire.
That's right. Happened all through the campaign last time. Ain't no different. Like you and Roy both mentioned, this happened where they gave Trump airtime even when he was a unknown candidate, so to speak.
Yeah,
have got all that airtime.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Mika. Thanks, everybody at CNN. Thank you. You know, Fox News, you expect it from. Yeah, thanks, Maggie Haberman at the New York Times, who spent all that time writing breathless butthurt emails, articles. Thanks. No, really, thanks for nothing, Mags.
Oh, and I've got no sense of forgiveness for Jake Tapper and his little apology for helping Trump get elected. No, they fully knew what they were doing because it increased their ratings to have Trump on the screen with his controversial remarks. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm totally baffled by people who say that they are they believe in, they're 100% American. I'm a patriot. I believe in democracy. If you believe in democracy, regardless of your party, you ought to be up in arms as to what's happening. But for some strange reason, most of the people are silent about it because of the fact they're the ones getting elected. And, you know, I guess as long as you're the one in power, you want to stay in power regardless of what the form of government is. And that's the sad part, is we're going to get, but not that we haven't had for many years now, but we're going to get exactly what we've asked for these past few years. We're going to get a form of government that is neither a republic nor a democracy. And I wonder how soon it will be. How soon will it be before we're called the United States of Russia, or some variation of said?
The American? No. We'll mirror Mother Russia. We'll be American Confederation. You know, Confederate States of America. It has ring to it, no? Yet.
You know, Vlad will want some kind of credit for making it happen, and some form of Russia in that name of the new colony of Russia, America. Right, though. We probably will want it to be called Mother Russia because, you know, the British didn't actually birth America. It was Trump or Putin who birthed America by helping elect Trump.
No, we will call new nation Novi Amerigrad.
Yeah, that ought to be a whole lot of fun to try and spell.
It's easy. It's easy once you learn Cyrillic alphabet in Trump school. If Trump can learn, anyone can learn.
That's old
family relation, Ivan Kincaid there. Will be magnificent new day of freedom.
On that cheery note, I will get out of here and let somebody else call in and talk. I've talked enough, but I do appreciate you giving me some time to talk a bit with you. And I'll be listening to the show too tonight whilst doing other things. So. Actually, I won't be listening to this show too. I am going to boycott it from the standpoint of I won't actually listen to the show too. I'll listen to the responses, but
I'm
not going to bother to listen to Trump.
I'll take it all in. That's my job. I take one for the team.
Well, I know Malloy's covering it, so I might, you know, I'll go to Malloy and listen to him do it. But I'm not going to give CNN or Fox, wouldn't give Fox that anyway, but CNN or MSNBC won't give them credit for the ratings to listen to it.
It's like something Scott and Punky just wrote. Corporate media's 2015 to 2016 blanket coverage of Trump. Scott and Punky noting, it's all fun games, easy programming, and high ratings until somebody loses an eye, and I'll add editorially ... or a republic.
Yep. Yep. Made him lots of money.
And bear in mind the response. Now, I mentioned that we needed an unprecedented degree of unity. Well, there's a considerable amount of hissying being had over the selection of Joseph P. Kennedy to deliver the response. And it's...
Why?
Because he's too male, he's too white, he's a ginger, he's too young, he's too Kennedy, he's not liberal enough, he's ideologically impure. Any of those things, it could have been anybody. If Frederica Wilson had delivered the Democratic response, I would have been cool with that.
Sure.
Short of Joe Manchin or Heidi fucking Heitkamp,
yep.
or any of those quizzling Trumpansy fifth columnists, I would have been okay with Bernie. I would have been okay with Elizabeth Warren, but see, here's the thing. There are people out there who are perceived to have 2020 presidential ambitions, and so all of those people are out the window at jump because letting one in would create a whole raft of bad feelings among all the others. So if you let one of the... Democratic Christian Ladies Association who ran out Al Franken, like Kamala Harris or Kirsten Gillibrand, deliver the response, that's going to piss off Cory Booker. Bernie's going to give his own, and that's cool. But there are people who are perceived to more or less already have their hats halfway into the ring. She says no, but Elizabeth Warren, you know. They're right out. It then becomes a question of who can offer a powerful rejoinder to Trump,
And I suspect that the reason Kennedy was chosen is because in the immigration debate and in the debate over the tax scam, he has routinely delivered some pretty ferocious jeremiads against the other side, and some of them have gone viral and gotten people excited.
Well, you don't hear me protesting the fact that any of them are doing it.
No. And everybody will have something valuable to add to the mix. Here's a funny. The theme of tonight's address is going to be Geezer Disgustus declaring a new American moment. Remember that phrase, new American moment. Boy, that sure sounds patriotic, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds like a bold vision. Here's the fun part. They lifted it from a 2010 speech that Hillary Clinton gave.
Yeah.
Back in 2010, Hillary Clinton gave a speech in which she said, "We need a new American moment, a moment when our global leadership is essential, even if we must often lead in new ways." On the other hand, what will come out of the cat's ass shaped gob of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is, "This is our new American moment. There's never been a better time to start living the American dream." Start?
Yep.
Nobody's lived the American dream until that little fuckwit came along? What?
He made it all possible for the rest of us. He's the greatest ever at everything.
Meanwhile, and I caught this interview earlier today, a linguist by the name of Kurt Anderson pointed out that it looks like while some people say that Trump's mind is in decline, Kurt Anderson says that his speech at least has declined insofar as he said it's not that he's declining in his verbal fluency. The emotional affect is narrower and harsher and angrier and more unhappy. It wasn't as though he was talking about reciprocal responsibilities that we have with our many allies abroad 30 years ago, and now he's just saying disgusting and crooked. But he does, I think, return to his safe words, his favorite words, somewhat more frequently. He was never Lin-Manuel Miranda, John Heilman said. And Kurt Anderson agreed, saying he was never Lin-Manuel Miranda or an intellectual. As for tonight, Anderson said, you will not hear it, the fundamental dialect. Presumably the periods will come and so forth, where in the real Trump dialect, it's a limited palette of words, of familiar adjectives, disgusting, horrible, positive adjectives like unbelievable, great, and fantastic. So, you know, what you're going to hear tonight is a very carefully written speech that they did not let him write, Kevin. And the text of the speech has now been released, so, you know, people who want to see it can go and it's a hot mess. Maybe I should just save people the time and read it in the cat's ass Trump voice, and have done with it. But anyway, it's lovely talking to you this evening, Kevin. Tolerate what you can as best you can, and we'll talk again soon. Kevin?
sorry. Had you on mute. Forgot I bent down to fit the cat while you were talking.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But, yep. Thank you very much for allowing me the time, and we'll all get through this together. So,
all we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it. Kevin, you have a good evening, my friend.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, stay warm.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. Out in Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin, responding to the idea of the new American moment. Definitely a moment that Hillary didn't come up with first in 2010. Arthur says, a moment of new lows, a moment of shame, a moment with a sense of imminent collapse. All of those moments, Arthur. Oy, what a mess this thing's going to be. Yuck. Yuck, yuck. Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve down on the Gulf Coast. Break class in case of emergency. Republican presidents are what happens when you lose a middle class, at least in this century. But they're happy not having a middle class. Hoo-wee, Marvelline, we're going to get $75 more a month. Well, I'll tell you what. And that's not me mocking the idea of $75. That's me mocking the idea that they're going to get the $75 because it's going to turn around and bite them in the ass. Yeah, but I tell you what, that Trump, he sure did make America white. I mean, great again. Yeah, boy, I'm telling you. 65% approval rating here in almost level West by Cole Trump Jr. Stan. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Steve also pointed out, voting hacks, subject line, jacked in the box. Voting hacks, not to worry. The Russians are getting better and better at it. And they are. We know they hacked into various and sundry state election databases. I mean, they got in there. We don't know if they manipulated results. They got in. When I mentioned the idea that people are having hissies over Joseph P. Kennedy III delivering the Democratic response, subject line hissy, this comes from Alma. Maybe those are Russian voices, bots still infiltrating Facebook to these real left-wing progressives at Al, trying to discredit Kennedy's response to State of the Union. Then all caps, it is still the Ruskies. That it is. But then again, the people I was seeing saying it are people I know. Real, live, honest to goodness, no kidding. Simon Simple and Simon Pure. Litmus test administering purity patrol members. And God love them. They've got great ideas. They want the same things that I want, that most of us want. They want universal health care. Medicare for all, something. They want a path to citizenship for people who damned well deserve it. The Dreamers. They want a return to a middle class that can make this country resemble something that we could refer to as great. But ever so many of them haven't the first foggy clue about how to obtain power or how to use it if they had it. Note coming from Scott and Punky, subject line, New American Moment. Scott writing this one. When I was a youngster in the 1960s, if it was Punky, it would say, when I was only an egg. When I was a youngster in the 1960s, my family had the World Book Encyclopedia. So did we. I recall finding an entry once under the heading, Moment. According to the expert who contributed to that listing, a moment was said to be 1 minute and 30 seconds in length. Given Trump's ability to rapidly guide the course of conversation or discourse, not to mention the gnat on meth length of the attention span of America these days, the duration of Trump's New American Moment will last about a moment. until some new drama erupts. I remember a bit that George Carlin used to do in which he would say, there's a moment coming. It's on its way. It's in the future. It'll be here soon. Damn, we missed it. That. Oh, and by the way, healthcare. You know, so many of us want some kind of universal access to healthcare for every American. You get it the minute you're born. And that's what we mean by universal. A little something happened on Wall Street today. We had two straight days of losses on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And today, the stock market took an almost immediate giant, noteworthy 400-point dump. And it did so. There was some fulminating about the bond market, yada, yada, yada. But it primarily did so on word coming out from Jamie Dimon, Warren Buffett, and Jeff Bezos. And the word was that the companies headed by those three men are going to... what is it? Diamonds at what? J.P. Morgan Chase? And, of course, Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway. And Bezos at Amazon. Those three organizations are going to combine. The financial know-how of J.P. Morgan Chase, the insurance savvy of Berkshire Hathaway, and the retail organizational skill of Amazon. And they are forming this syndicate, and I think that's an appropriate word to use. They're forming this syndicate for the purpose of coming up with what was described in all the press releases as a common sense solution to healthcare. They're going to leverage technology and finance and concepts of insurance to provide a health plan to the 1.1 million employees of those three business empires, J.P. Morgan Chase, Amazon, presumably the Washington Post as well, and Berkshire Hathaway's companies, with an eye toward making healthcare and more particularly health insurance transparent, accessible, and financially affordable. Now, I'm not cheerleading the idea, but here's what it was. I mean, in the news reporting on it, there were various and sundry things cited, but the 400-point dump that the market took today was largely health insurance stocks devaluing, as if this thing was going to happen day after tomorrow. It won't. But various reasons were cited for it. But there was one thing that was tucked into the description of what this syndicate is going to be that I think more than anything else shook up in, investors. You know, that's the term we use. Investors on Wall Street today got a case of the fantods when a... Right. Well, what gave them the dribbling squirts was the fact that this syndicate that's going to form this health insurance company and healthcare delivery operation, apparently it's going to be a total package kind of affair. What shook up Wall Street was the fact that from jump, the organization is not going to seek to make a profit. Now, if you look in your various states, you'll find that most Blue Crosses are nonprofit associations. The word nonprofit does not mean not profitable. It doesn't mean doesn't make money. It just means that it is not. It just means that it is tucked away in a corner of the tax code, where it's not subject to profit-based business taxes. I mean, for instance, the Sierra Club is a nonprofit. They're sitting on something around $0.1 billion right now. And you don't exactly live on beans and weenies if you're in the upper echelons of the hierarchy of that nonprofit, which would be a corporation under any other circumstance. Hospital administrators for nonprofit hospitals do very well for themselves. Thank you very much. But it was that idea that shook up Wall Street, because if this thing succeeds and it's anything other than just a reiteration of Blue Cross Blue Shield, if it really is a rethinking of healthcare delivery and healthcare finance and insurance, it's going to point a spotlight on the con that is for-profit health insurance in this country. And that will be bad. Reading the write-ups of this thing, it looks a lot like these three oligarchs are trying to come up with something that would almost resemble a single-payer plan, but be done under the rubric of business and not government. And that has got to scare the living bejesus out of CEOs who make their Christmas bonuses based on how many claims they don't pay. Can't help but. And also tucked away in the release about this healthcare syndicate initiative is the notion that it will start out as being available to the 1.1 million employees of J.P. Morgan Chase, Berkshire Hathaway's Associated Holdings, and Amazon Washington Post. But it also pointed out that if it succeeds, they want to expand. Now, the whole thing is interesting in light of the recent tax scam that was passed by the GOP Congress, because corporate taxes are at an all-time low. My God, for most corporations, they were zero anyway, and some corporations wound up getting checks written back to them from the government. And now it's even lower than that. While, you know, people in blue states take it in the shorts relative to what they're paying in terms of state and local taxes, SALT. It was interesting, though, that Wall Street responded by having a sick headache and having to go to bed. But it's an interesting thought. I'm no capitalist. Never have been. And I have about as much trust in oligarchs as I do in the miraculous saving power of the water from that little pond at Lourdes, which is to say zero. But how American would it be if that turned out to be the vehicle whereby more people were insured to a point of something approaching universality? Now, it's going to take a long time to get this thing up and running, and an even longer time for it to approach the point where you could tell if it's if it's A, sustainable, and B, scalable. But it's an interesting concept to ponder, because a lot of European systems are public-private partnerships. Although, but you have to wonder if, as has been said, a state can't pull off a universal single-payer system with its population, how are you going to do it with just 1.1 million people and insure everybody therein? One wonders if the insurance will be mandatory. Because, you know, that having a mandate, that's un-American. People have to be free enough to be stupid enough to not take insurance. Right? Sure. But I thought that quite fascinating. And meanwhile, Flavio reminds me, subject line, the American dream. U.S. surpasses the Cayman Islands to become the second largest tax haven on Earth. People come here to dodge taxes. It's a beautiful thing. Not. I have a feeling we'll be having a merry little conversation come tomorrow evening. We're waiting now to see if if Trump will release the memo, so to speak. NBC News reported today that Trump, on the one hand, is saying, Mueller will clear me any day now. I'll be cleared. It'll be fine. But One individual speaking to NBC is, of course, on condition of anonymity, because everyone lives in fear of the Carotene Caligula and his mercurial fits. He threw a fit on the way home from Davos when he heard that an FBI executive had suggested that the memo ought not be released. The memo that's based on classified information, the memo that Devin Nunez didn't write, but that his staffers did, based on a 100 or so page FISA warrant that they didn't even see, and reduced to 4 pages, which, unless you're using some sort of typeface in, oh, I don't know, insurance company fine print font, could not be put onto 4 pages. Well, anyway, Trump is apparently pondering, according to this anonymous source, Trump is even talking to friends about the possibility of asking Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, Attorney General of the United States of America, to try to find a way to prosecute Robert Mueller. Does that do to you what it did to me? Does that give you chills? Is that a little bit terrifying? Here's how it would work. We're sorry, Mr. Mueller, you won't be able to run the federal grand jury today because he has to go testify to another federal grand jury. This is what is rattling around in the spirochete-infested passages of what remains of Trump's brain. There's no crime to really charge him with. They'll just sort of make one up. Hell, maybe they'll charge him with 18 U.S.C. 1001 lying to the FBI by saying that, I don't know, that he's got the authority to investigate the president's financial dealings, because that was long said to have been a line in the sand for Trump. Well, they can investigate the Russia thing. There was no collusion. But you can't look into all the filthy shit I've done to get my hand to grub around and get money over the course of my long and disgusting career. And then there's, and ever since I mentioned it earlier, the Stormy Daniels business has been sort of pestering my mind. If she never had sex with Donald Trump, what was the $130,000 for? Was it for having sex with Don Jr.? Or Eric? Maybe she was a wet nurse for little baby Barron. We know one thing, though. Melanoma is said to be attending the speech tonight, having previously, in the last couple of weeks, disappeared like an aging Soviet Politburo member. She backed out of the trip to Davos, didn't want to be on the same plane with Marcus Aurelius. Once he was gone, she made a quick trip over to the Holocaust Museum and said something enigmatic, and then took off for some spa time down at that tacky pile of bricks they own in Florida, Mar-a-Lago, or that he owns and she gets to use. Now, suddenly, we've had the release of this letter accusing the Wall Street Journal of being foreign media, and contemporaneously an announcement that America's first lady to ever take her clothing off in exchange for money and display herself naked in exchange for money will suddenly make an appearance at the State of the Union. Now that Stormy has recounted her previous tale of the sexy time that she had over the course of months with Dolt 45. Is that too far out there? It's speculation. But is that too far out there? Or does it make a little bit of sense? Quid pro quo. Tit for tat. Let's run back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. Is this me?
That's you.
Hey, this is Kenny.
Hey, what's happening, Kenny?
Oh, not too much. Just wondering if anybody else is worried yet or not.
Nothing's ever safe when one of these things is going to go down. You know there's going to be something mean or stupid or hateful, or it's just a matter of trying to figure out what it's going to be.
I've been meaning to call you ever since our little fun drill that morning, you know, waking up to impending doom. This is getting kind of nuts. You know,
well, I mean, look, let's...
My wife was already awake, so, you know, she came in there and woke me up and said, we've got a missile coming at us. And I'm like, no, I'm waking up. Wait, say that again? You know, she's like, they're saying there's a missile coming at us. And I'm like, okay. I'm waking up, and I'm like, okay, where do we go? What do we do? It's not going to come towards us, so... We kind of have to just sit here and hunker down and wait and watch Oahu get their ass whooped and wonder if we're going to survive the fallout, which, you know, we should. We're plenty of miles away, and the winds are going to blow the other way. But, you know, you try to rationalize, but then you're like, wait a minute. Trump's president. We knew this was coming, but not so fast. You know, this might be fake. We were thinking it was fake within 5 minutes.
But did you just kind of sit there, or check to make sure that you had a some food on hand, some water, you know, that, I mean, what do you, I, I've lived,
right, what
I've,
do you do?
I've lived through tornado warnings and seen tornadoes coming at me, but you know, there's something, I mean, if you live in that neck of the woods, you've usually got a plan in place, you know, either, you know, you go to the crawl space, go to the basement, get in the bathtub and pull mattresses over you, something like open all the windows, what have you. But what do you do, Kenny, when it's, there's a missile?
All right, and you've had half an hour, no more than half an hour, really about 27, 25 minutes, you know. So you've got to be ready, you know, period. You know, we've got maybe 2 weeks of food, but that ain't going to be enough. You know, we really need a year's worth of damn food, but who has the money to store an year's worth of food? And I'm not going to go get that damn bucket pudding shit.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming, yeah.
But, you know, it's like, you know, so we got lots of canned goods and stuff, but, you know, the way stuff is here, we need to be 2 weeks ready at a moment's notice anyway, because the barge might not show up for a couple months, you know.
Beans,
so it's not
rice,
2 weeks. It's,
beans,
you
rice, and cornmeal.
You got to be ready for a couple months if something goes down.
Yeah, beans, rice, and cornmeal. But that then means that because those are dried foods, you've also got to... It's the water that takes up all the space. I mean, I know,
right,
because we sort of live that way here because we've got an unreliable power grid that can go down for weeks on end. I mean, it's not Puerto Rico by any stretch of the imagination. But you're right. If you're looking at water, if you're looking I'm still here.
Okay,
you're still
there.
Here. If you're looking at a gallon per person per day, and it's you and Mrs. Kenny, then that's 14 gallons a week. That's 56 gallons a month. And at that point
that's,
in time, we're
not just
for
drinking water.
Yeah, we're not flushing toilets or bathing or anything like that. That's just, you know, drinking, you know, and that really doesn't even take into account what you need to rehydrate dried foods.
Well, Yeah, I was at the dentist today, and I've gotten so I can't hold my mouth anymore, you know. And almost every time he took his hand out of my mouth, I started saying something about Trump. I was like, I was just like, God, it's like I'm just so pissed right now. It's just like, so I kept telling him, you know, and like Trump, you know, when that missile happened, you know, he didn't even care. He was golfing. He's like, oh, good, Hawaii's gonna be blown off the map. Good, you know, West Coast.
Yeah, maybe
Hawaii,
maybe Obama will be there.
They don't give a shit about us. You know?
Maybe Obama will be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Bill Maher was over here. I think he was over on Maui at the time, and so you know he talked about it on his show, you know, the Bill Maher show or whatever. And you know, it's like, you know, it's just nuts. We're going through an insane period. I'm hearing of other people how they're losing weight, you know, because they're all just freaked out. It's nuts, you know.
but I mean, and you know, it's an ongoing inquiry here at this program to figure out, you know, how do we support each other? How do we provide each other, you know, some sort of respite or collegiality, so that we don't all just feel like we're that we're rolling downhill and the wheels are coming off.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's I'm almost at a point I want to cut the media off to completely, because, you know, I don't watch TV at all. All I listen to is stuff online, because I can't even watch 5 seconds of stuff on TV, because when they're not, you know, they just lie, period, by omission. They just do not cover anything that we need to hear, and all they do is pop news or crap. And it's like, and then it's this back and forth. Here's the Republican, here's the Democrat, and neither one of them really are representing the people. It's just like, get off there. You know, I'm so pissed off at the Democrats right now, more them than the Republicans, because they're just not standing up for us, and it's just pitiful. Obama didn't put anything in place that was like, you know, other than social issues and what other else.
I know, and I was kind of having that conversation earlier, talking about the question of ultimately what was the presidency of Barack Obama about. And I think it was imperial maintenance, because you know my theory of the imperial administrator. That's what the president of the United States is. The president is a short-term administrator of empire, not a monarch.
Well, he's the CFN, the chief financial officer, or whatever,
or the CP, you know, or the CPO, the chief political officer.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, like ExxonMobil, they had their, you know, they've got their own, you know, army. They've got their own political, you know, they're, you know, people like them, they can run their own governments better than we can, you know.
But if you could have Barack Obama back right this instant, you'd welcome him with open arms, wouldn't you?
I don't know, because it would just, like you said, it would just be placeholder again. And maybe this. I don't know how else to put him. Yeah, you know, this orange asshole will wake people up and, you know, get the real Democrats out there. And I'm sick of these corporate Democrats. They're not Democrats. We got to get rid of them. It's really pissing us off, because that's screwing up the whole party. And they won't say anything about the redistricting, all this stuff, you know, that's been going on for, what, 20-plus years. Give it up.
And but what you're pointing to is the absolute necessity of, you know, you can – because the Barack Obama, if you look at alternative timelines, Barack Obama with a solid Democratic majority in both houses of Congress is a vastly different president than Barack Obama with a bunch of maniacs and rabid dogs snapping at his ass every time he tried to sit down. Those are two vastly different scenarios. So the question becomes one of, you know, how do you do what the Republicans did? How do you get a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president?
You know, not be spineless.
We managed,
you know,
it for
they're too spineless. They don't know how to fight. We're fighting, you know, people that are coming out with the guns and knives and missiles and everything, and we're fighting with words. And we're sitting there saying, this is the truth, and they don't give a shit about the truth. They never have. All they go after is feelings, and they win every time off of feelings.
Right, and there's no getting around the fact that when the teabag
when the teabagger election of 2010 came around, you know who the Dems who lost were by and large. The
middle of the rosers.
It was the blue dogs. It was the Republican.
Wait, yeah.
It was the Republican light Democrats, given an opportunity to vote for a real Republican or an imitation one. The voters chose, in their infinite stupidity, chose the real deal. They chose the one that really had the red bloody meat hanging from its fangs.
Because he was consistent with his agenda. They thought he was, they're not wishy-washy.
Well, no, this
they may be assholes, but they're not wishy-washy.
This was 2010. There's no, that was 2010. There was no Trump on the horizon. It was a white lash against a black president, and that was the biggest single motivator. What I'm trying to get to is, it's not like 2018 Kenny is going to be a presidential election. It's not. It might be a referendum on Trump, but he's not going to be on the ballot. What you're going to have is 500 maybe different congressional elections in different districts and different states around the country. And we have to do what we can to get whatever kind of majority we can, because you have to have power before you can exercise it. Then you apply the pressure. Let's take a Hawaii example. I used to have a little bit of respect for Mazie Hirono. Okay.
Oh God, I lost it the other day. Back in the Purity Brigade pushing Al Franken out. That's insane.
Bingo.
Why didn't they say Trump first? Trump first. Trump first. I'm sorry. Get this Me Too movement behind Trump first.
Yeah, he was replaced by somebody who's just as progressive. Bullshit. People have individual skill sets, and the woman who replaced Al Franken does not have the force that he brought to bear. I saw Kamala Harris referred to in an article today as the anti-Sessions. And I thought, well, now we understand why you got behind getting rid of Franken, because Franken was the guy who made Jeff Sessions look like the goddamn thug and crook that he is.
Yeah, the Keebler elf sitting there.
It was Al Franken that practically made and shut the book on the case for Sessions being an out and out perjurer, not Kamala Harris. But by God, he's out of the way now, so she's the anti-Sessions. So I understand what you're getting at, but you know what? It's like the people who already want to string Doug Jones up because he's voting like an Alabama conservative Democrat. The thing is, you've got to have people with D's after their names, Kenny. For that one critically important election at the beginning of a new Congress, the one that establishes who holds the majority.
Of course, ours is a safe state. We could have not voted at all; it wouldn't have mattered. But we got both votes right. We went out and voted for Bernie, and then we held our breath and went and voted for Hillary.
Yeah.
it sucks, but what the hell, we do not want a red, we just don't want that R anywhere near there.
But the fact of the matter is, you can't look at, the
even scene. If they don't let us have legal weed yet, we know how, some of these Democrats out here are just as dumb. Why does California have legal weed and Hawaii doesn't? All the tourist money that this state can raise, it's sickening. It's just stupid, the money we're losing.
Well, see, here's what that is. I figured that out, Kenny.
The Japanese run most of the politics out here, and they're kind of conservative, even though they're Democrats.
Well, yeah, but you don't want that big blue cloud of smoke from all the burning cannabis to obscure the tourism value of Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. Because those volcanoes out there smoking in the distance, that's got some tourism value, and if If the whole island chain is just covered in pot smoke, well, that's all gone. That's just over. So, you know, I think I got that solved. But you know, look at it. This is his first State of the Union address tonight. Can we say and actually be comfortable saying it that it would be a much better America if this was Hillary Clinton's first State of the Union address tonight? Can we just say that?
I could say that, you know, because, you know, like I said, I voted for her. You know, I was ready to deal with her definitely a lot better than him, you know?
Yeah. And,
you know, no matter how bad she would be, and, you know, just like Obama, you know, just really a placeholder, unless we could really push her hard, you know, at least we didn't have to worry about her taking all kinds of children's rights, you know, immigrants' rights away, you know, everybody's rights away.
Right, and look at
except for bankers.
Again, I'm not trying to be a big old downer, but look at what you get in November of this year. If the stars align and the blue polka dotted snowy super blood moon hangs in the sky for 30 consecutive days, and we get a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, what do we get out of that? It's important. It's decidedly important. What we get is an ability to stop Trump's worst excesses, and you make him have to do what Obama had to do, and that is be president by executive order, which, of course, he campaigned was the most terrible thing in the world, terrible, horrible, awful.
He's had no problem signing quite a few of them.
Right, but what you're, you know, the best you can hope for there is gridlock until 2020. And I want, you know, I want a Democratic Congress, House and Senate. Make no mistake about it. But it's hard not to look backward and say, you know, even if she was sitting through impeachment hearings, which she would be at this point, it would still be manifestly better. Because, among other things, I think she would have taken the Russian rat-fucking of the election seriously, as opposed to this orange clown who's doing everything he can to obfuscate it because he's up to his orange eyebrows in it. Agreed?
All right. Well, what about these sanctions that Obama supposedly put... something about the cyber hacking, and then he has not even instituted them, and they were supposed to go into effect in 300 days, and we just passed the 300-day mark on when they were supposed to go into effect. Well, they were supposed to be in effect, but, you know, we passed the 300-day mark on it. It's like, you know, what more evidence do we need?
Well, they wrote that bill in artfully, Kenny. They wrote it such that they gave him... or they gave the president an out. And so they're saying, well, no, we're not failing to enforce it, and we're not delaying. It's just that we're not ready yet. My dog ate my copy of the law. I hear my mother calling. I've got to do my hair tonight. And so, and remember, this thing was, do you know, in total, between the votes of both houses of Congress, do you know how many people, Republicans and Democrats alike, on that particular bill, you know how many people voted against it?
I don't know. That's so far back now.
House and Senate combined, there were five, count them, five no votes. Three in one house, two in the other. And now
it was very popular then, you're saying?
Yeah.
It was like over, yeah, fine. That was... I mean, especially in today's...
it was veto-proof. Trump didn't want to sign it, but somebody had to explain some civics on the fly to him. Look, sir, they've got a veto-proof majority. If you veto this, they're just going to override your ass, and it's going to be very embarrassing for you. What do you say we just don't enforce it? Now, we're running out of time, but here's one little thing to ponder on the way out the door, Kenny. Bill Clinton got impeached for allegedly lying about a blowjob. But Andrew Johnson got impeached for defying a law that had been passed by Congress and signed into law by the president. He refused to enforce it. And that got him impeached.
Ooh, okay. That sounds good.
This thing by itself, if it is correctly characterized, could be a ground for a separate count in a bill of impeachment.
Man, failure to do something. What?
Failure to execute a duly enacted law of the Congress that had become.
There you go.
It been, you know, exactly.
Man, well, give me a little hope. Thank you, Bob.
Well, I'm trying, Kenny. I'm trying, man. I'm trying. And I'm really glad you called in and talked a little bit about what that felt like, that missile alert, because I had been wondering since the thing first broke. The first thing I thought was, you know, I wonder how Kenny's doing.
Yeah, I've been meaning to call every day. I've just been they kind of kicked me in the ass, though, because it made me get up and fucking wake up. You know, we could die any fucking day here, so might as well get out there and kick my pain in the ass. You know, I've been working my ass off ever since, and I'm just pushing through the pain, you know, having to smoke 24/7 almost to keep the pain away. But it's, I'm going to a chiropractor 2 times or more a week, too.
I wish I could address some of the things I have to deal with the same way. I honestly do. But, you know, we're still waiting until 2019 when we'll be able to take pills or use a tincture or, you know, rub it into our navels or something, but not smoke it. Not smoke it.
Well, smoking is not always the best necessarily way for pain, you know, especially if you've got a localized pain or something, or an internalized, say, a kidney or something wrong. You know, eating it is definitely better for those type things.
I think edibles are off the list on this bill, too.
Well, that's insane. Okay, well, yeah. I don't want to hold you up anymore. I know it's getting close to the edge.
Yeah, it's about time for me to take one for the team. Kenny, it's awful good to hear from you, my friend. Don't be a stranger, all right?
Try not to.
All right, you take care now.
I'll see some whales,
all
hopefully.
Right, and our best to Mrs. Kenny.
Aloha.
Aloha. Somebody, Kenny, calling from the Big Island. Time to get out of here. Time to watch the stupid speech. Arthur, damn it. You know who else smoked pot? Hitler. That's, you know, who else did coke? Hitler. Thanks. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing little conversation. Thank you so very much. It means a ton to me, and I hope you get something out of it, too. I know you do, because you tell me. Meanwhile, thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our pinch hit utility midweek chat room moderator, Steve, this evening. Thank you, Steve. All around a great guy. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. It's the only way it stays on the air. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. All right, Agnes, lash me to the mast. I'm out of here. Later.